Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames, messieurs, welcome to 2Bit Podcast, the channel. At the end of the day is the name of the show. I am your host, Jason Marinchuk, and today I am joined by Rebecca. Say your last name, Rebecca.
Dillingham.
Dillingham, Rebecca Dillingham, or also known as Distant Mama. Thank you, Distant Mama. Thanks, Mama. Rebecca. I'm confused.
Whatever works. Rebecca.
My constant excuse is that this is very early in the morning for me. Yeah. And I thank each and every one of you for being here. Thank you, Rebecca, for being here as well. We are here, to talk about Christ and the King. A little bit different than Christ is the King, although basically the same thing. There has been a brouhaha online created, of course, to get the clicks. We are here to talk about politics, especially dissident right politics, and being Orthodox Christian and the delicate balancing act between those two worlds. Before we get into that, though, hi, how you doing, Rebecca?
Hello, I am well.
Tell the nice folks all about you, and we will go from there.
Okay, I have a blog called Dissident Mama. Obviously, it's dissidentmama.net. If you go to .com, it'll also take you there too. I've been blogging since December 2016. Started podcasting. April 6th will be my 4-year anniversary. That's one of the things we'll talk about. I've gotten that off my plate. I'm semi-retired, as I tell people, from podcasting because something had to give. I haven't done an interview since early December, but I'm not totally done. It's not official yet, but I think I have 84, 85 podcasts under my belt. So you can find all that stuff at dissidentmama.net. I also am a co-founder of the Ludwell Orthodox Fellowship. We had our first conference last September, and we are having another one this coming September 7th in Lockhart, Texas, Buck Johnson's Parish. And some of the co-founders, Father John Whiteford, who you've had on your show, Dr. Clark Carlton, and Dr. Don Livingston are also co-founders. And there is a gentleman named Ben Dixon, who attends my parish with me, and he's taking over as operations manager for me. So I'm still part of the gang, as I call it, but that is also something I needed to get off my plate. So it's really serendipitous that this is one of the topics you want to talk about, because I've been doing a lot of trying to get things off my plate recently. But if you want to see all that stuff, all that content, southernorthodox.org. I almost said .net. southernorthodox.org. And other than that, wife, mom, dog owner, Orthodox Christian, occasional gardener, that kind of thing.
It's a full plate. I think that's kind of what people don't sometimes appreciate, and sometimes even I don't appreciate it when I'm we were saying off air that, you know, in March I try to got in my head, I'm like, I'll do more, and you do more and you hit a wall, because when you're self-produced and you're doing this, you know, almost as a passion project, in a way, it you know, you have to balance life and work and scheduling and getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to talk to Father John Whiteford at 4 and going, I can't talk right now. I don't have words. You know, and shoestring budgets and all the rest of it. Like you said, sometimes things have to give and you have to be very respectful of, it was one of the things that really kind of came to me, I think, after the, after talking to Father John, is that, it's one thing in order to respect my guests, I have to respect myself. And, you know, being unprepared or being exhausted is not a good look, you know, when you're trying to do these things. So now, you know, I'm doing the Lex Friedman now. I don't know if anyone in the chat is going to mention it, but, you know, we can maybe just talk about, you know, Rebecca, tell me about love. How important is love in the world, Rebecca? And we'll just calm this one right now. I don't know if you've watched Lex Friedman. Okay, Christ is King.
Amen. We're done. Amen. There you go.
Good night, everybody. You had a pinned post on your ex profile saying, "It's more than okay. It's more than okay to say Christ is King. May thy compassion be praised, O Christ, O our King, O Son of God, worshipped by all. Thou art our King, Thou art our God, Thou art the author of our life and great hope. St. Ephrem of the Syrian. I feel that this whole thing gets confused for people. Of course, now we have Ben Shapiro and even Andrew Klavan, that creature, who, hi, Andrew. I know he's watching our stuff, dissident right stuff now. So, hi, Andrew. You're weird. You creep me out. They're trying to make this whole thing of saying Christ is King, or let's say being Christian in general, anti-Semitic. And this is sort of like, we've called this. We kind of knew this was going to come, especially with right wingers who are, you know, since I've noticed in the last, even my own life, but especially in our circles over the last, let's say, 4 years, people have not only just been converting back to the church, but people have been getting much more serious about the church in general, both online and I think in personal life. And as that zeitgeist has been changing, you're starting to see, let's say, the Con Inc. types try to navigate those waters, because as Father Turbo once said, you can't be Orthodox and Zionist at the same time. It's one of the things you have to give. And that's been tricky, I think, for a lot of the Con Incs who are still very much rooted in sort of the evangelical, you know, Israel's a literal place, dispensationalism kind of viewpoint. And now it's like, if you can be Christian as long as you're not really Christian, and that's becoming a new dividing line. So maybe you can talk about that a little bit, because I think that gets us into the whole balancing between politics, powers and principalities, and being Orthodox. But how do you see that playing out in your life, or in your interactions?
Well, as a person who used to be Protestant, and there are many good Protestants I know, I thought I tried to be a good Protestant too when I was, but it's one of the things that I don't think it's encouraged within Protestantism and even some realms of Catholicism, that, you know, it's that stereotype that you just go to church on Sunday and then the whole rest of the week you're doing something else. Well, one thing that I think is absolutely necessary and is just a byproduct of becoming Orthodox and attending the liturgy regularly, going to as many of the services as you can, is you practice life through an Orthodox lens. So everything you look at through an Orthodox lens. So you know how you hear politicians say, oh, you know, well, I'm a devout, you know, Catholic, but I don't bring that into my job kind of thing. When it's like, no, I mean, your entire, everything you do, you know, walking your dog, you should do it through an Orthodox lens. You know, it becomes who you are. It's not a hobby. It's not a part-time thing. And that's very difficult, you know, and it is a struggle, but it is the most important struggle. So I would say, there's a lot of ways we can go with this, but just Christ is King. And, you know, I don't understand why that was controversial at all. You know, when we say the Trisagion for our morning and evening prayers, you know, part of it is, O Heavenly King, the Comforter, the Spirit of Truth, who art everywhere and fillest all things, right? You know, we have, you know, if you go to the index of the Orthodox Study Bible and look up, you know, kingdom, let's see, I think I marked it, actually, I have my Orthodox Study Bible, Kingdom of Heaven / God. I mean, the entries, Old Testament and New Testament, I mean, fill up half of a column. You know, the kingdom, let's just look at it in the dictionary of the Orthodox Study Bible. God's rule and reign, this kingdom revealed by Christ, is present in the world through the church. The fullness of the kingdom will come when Christ returns to judge the living and the dead, creating a new heaven and earth. So somehow maybe I missed this in Protestantism. I didn't know that that was controversial in Protestantism. And then you see people like Lila Rose, who's, you know, pro-abortion, and she gave some video screed about how saying it, you know, hurts people's feelings or something. And, you know, that's ludicrous.
There's even
a Christian. I mean,
there's articles now springing up saying, like, wearing the cross displaying the cross is anti-Semitic. Yeah. There was a leaked thing out there that the green black creature from the ADL was giving a private talk to educators, saying that, you know, even drawing Santa Claus could be viewed as anti-Semitic for Jews. And it's like, look, man, I peaked with the octopus. I don't remember. You remember that when Greta Thunberg had the autism octopus in a picture when she was like being vaguely pro-Palestinian, and they were all and like, I think even Jordan Peterson got in on it, saying this is it's part of a propaganda from 1945 with an octopus like hugging the world. And I'm like, yes, of course, Greta Thunberg knew all about that. Yes, Greta Thunberg is a secret neo-Nazi. And this is the clown world we live in, of course. You know, it's this. I consider it sort of a bitter white pill,
right?
Where they're revealing their intentions, and it's becoming so naked and obvious.
Yeah.
That you have to bury your head so hard in the sand to not notice these things anymore. And I'm starting to see it now. I was just at a family wedding this past weekend, I was privy to a few conversations happening around me. I've learned to kind of just be quiet because no one really wants to hear what I have to say about anything anymore. And but it was funny to hear from. I started hearing people start saying things like, you know, not these exact words, but something similar to like, we don't live in a civilization anymore. I'm like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Things are getting really bad. Really? Yeah. You know, like, please tell me more, right?
Right.
And these are dyed in the wool, blue-pilled, you know, you're talking to CNN people who are finally starting to wake up, and a little bit of that programming is getting shaken. Mm-hmm. And, like, I have a lot of compassion for that. I know what it feels like to have all of a sudden all your priors thrown on your face and realize you were wrong about, you know, the universe and reality as you knew it. It's not a fun time to go through, especially when you look around, you're like, well, who do I talk to about this? You know, part of my impetus for the podcast was like, I got to talk this out. Like, I got to sort this out because, what the hell's going on? And, this isn't much of an interview show, Rebecca. So this is a conversation where I just ramble and you just jump in whenever you can.
Well, I was going to say these are wheat and chaff moments, and we have a lot of them, and they're only going to be more. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to, you know, anybody who starts to have those little the clues, right? Whatever they happen to be noticing, they start connecting the dots on something, and you try to look at the big picture, the spiritual, the civilizational, the existential. That's always what I try to do, is like big picture. So you could bring up maybe some things that are going in geopolitics, and I may not know the exact thing that's happening, but I think it's important to step back and see how it plays into the spiritual warfare that is all around us all the time. And, one of the things that I do, I wouldn't necessarily call myself like an Orthodox blogger. I'm a blogger who happens to be Orthodox, and I talk about those things a lot, but I'm also Southern without apology. So, you know, when monuments in Southern history started being attacked years ago, you know, I tried to tell people, you don't have to love the South, but you know, we're the low hanging fruit. They're going to come after you eventually. And then when good Orthodox people would push back, well, it's just not nice in this. And I said, they're coming for the cross. You know, they're going to come from the cross because of me loving my ancestors. And, you know, my home is deemed as hateful. Well, they're going to come after the most loving thing of all, which is Christ. You know, when I see that all as a saint, a struggle too. I mean, we don't have to get on a historical tinge, but I see that as coming after the South isn't a political war. It is an existential, spiritual, and civilizational war too. And it's all part of the big picture too. So I bring, I embrace these wheat and chaff moments. They are hard. You will lose friends. You will find out things about yourself you never knew. It will be shocking. And I actually wrote a reconciliation series recently, and I talked about we had a reconciliation monument in Washington, D.C. that had been put up during the reconciliation period, and it got taken down. So I kind of talked about like the geopolitical Southern, you know, political aspect of that. But then the part two was talking about how reconciliation as a whole is just not encouraged, at least in America. Nobody wants to do the heavy lifting. Nobody wants to have hard conversations. They just want to kick the can down the road and hope for the best. And that's not going to cut it. It's just not going to cut it. And you will be shocked at people you thought were good people and possibly allies and people that had your back that may not want to do that kind of thing. And that sucks really bad, but it also gives you a clarity. I think there's a power to that clarity. And I think the sooner people wake up to that clarity, the better as well.
Talk about a good person who you can always depend on. Buck Johnson is in the chat. I don't know if you want to show off your t-shirt.
I was going to wear this t-shirt. So this used to be Buck's podcast. And I think Buck sent me his very last t-shirt before he started the Counterflow thing. But I thought that if we were going to be talking about Christ the King, that this was a good t-shirt to wear, but I didn't know about it till the last minute that we were going to be talking about it. But, you know, so this seems like a political shirt, death to tyrants. But really, who is the ultimate tyrant? The devil, right? Our sin. We are slaves to that sin, because it's a tyrannical thing that, you know, we have to lean on Christ the King, right? And then if you can see, I'm not sure you can, it says, let's see what it says. His tagline was anti-warfare, anti-welfare, pro-liberty. And I was thinking too, like when I was a Protestant, you know, learning about liberty and Christ, you know, and how that's not a political thing. And Protestants understand that, you know, they know that freedom in Christ doesn't mean my democracy or voting. It means you are free in Christ, you know, and he is the ultimate thing, the ultimate love, that if you lean on him, it doesn't matter what's going on around you. Okay. So, you know, that's a concept that Protestants understand. So why don't they understand the kingship thing? And then even like some libertarians and some people I like, I won't mention his name, but somebody was going off on this, like, I guess it was not a theological, it's more like a Christological thing. And just saying how, you know, Jesus didn't come to be a political king, and so he can't be a king, you know, and that's like totally missing the forest for the trees. So it's like most things, it's really not that complicated, and people just need to take a deep breath, do their thing, and then let the chips fall where they may.
I think the secret to a lot of these things is pride, and confronting pride delivers you to interesting places, delivers you to humility. You can't be, it's one of the, I think, one of the main reasons that Orthodoxy places such a high value on humility, on being humble, because it's very, I don't think you can be prideful and humble at the same time. They're incongruent. Father Turbo Quayles once said that something that really shifted my way of thinking was that depression is a form of pride. It's this idea of, why are these things happening to me? Or why aren't things happening the way I want them to? You're becoming this arbiter of how reality should work, as if, you know, and, you know, it's like, well, who the fuck are you? Like, you don't know, right? Like, even with suffering, oftentimes the great sufferings of our time is we suffer in the moment, but we suffer when we put it into context, like you were saying earlier, that the phronim of Orthodoxy, the worldview, the way of being, is, it needs to be complete. It's kind of how I answer questions now, like, oh, are you, you know, what religion, you know, what political bent are you? And I'm like, I'm Orthodox, or I'm becoming Orthodox, I should say. And I'm starting to try to see everything through that lens, where I'm neither left nor right. And this isn't some sort of libertarian third party thing. It's that it's a separation. Like, I can, I've said this on the show, I think, with Thomas 7-7, is that if you take the Israeli Gaza situation currently, or Ukraine and Russia, I can look at it from two from I can put two different hats on. My power and politics hat goes on, and I can look at the Israeli Gaza thing going, yes, okay, well, Israel should be doing what they're doing and live with the consequences. Like, fine, eliminate every single one of them. You know, take complete and control and be, there's your dissident right, power, a power in politics, you know, a totalizing power kind of politics viewpoint. From my Orthodox hat, however, my human hat, it's horrible. It's what's happening is beyond the pale. And so the answer to these questions, then it's like, well, how do you balance these things? And one of the ways I'm doing it, and maybe Rebecca, you can talk more about this and for your own personal life, is now I've become more and more separated from, let's say, the world, you know, to be in this world, but not of it. So I can view these things from that lens. Obviously, they're not happening around me, so that makes it a little bit easier. But as I'm predicting certain things, like realizing that we no longer live in a civilization, and that we must go from zero to one, that we must start to build a new civilization from the rubble of the old. And it doesn't seem that way. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, you're not walking through some Hollywood wasteland, but all the evidence is there that things have stopped working, that the glue that, you know, this regio that has bound Western civilization together, that has made all these things possible, has been deteriorated to the point where no one can get anything done. So it's that urge to say, okay, look, we need to put things in proper places and proceed with the right discernment, not just with, you know, with what's going on in the media, but what's going on in our current lives. So anyways, that's, I don't know where you want to go with that, but.
Well, one thing, the pride thing, well, yes, I often say, let's go to the depression thing. I often say, and I'm not the one who came up with these words, it's probably in the Bible, and I'm sure saints have said it, but despair is a tool of the devil. So you can have your bad days and be bummed out, but, you know, you can't hang on to it. You know, pray for your enemies, but also forgive, but you do not have to forget either. And that's one of the things too. I often talk about that with my father confessor. You know, we don't have to forget. You know, you can, like I said, pray for your enemies, pray for people who have done horrible things. But in Orthodoxy, we also remember. We remember the new martyrs, right? We don't say, oh, well, Bolshevism happened and whoops, let's move on. You know, we think about these things. And that's one of the things that made me fall in love with Orthodoxy, because I'm a history buff. And when I realized, wow, you know, from the apostles to Martin Luther, there's a whole bunch of stuff in there I need to learn about. And, you know, how did I not pay attention to that 1,000 years in there, you know? So you start like uncovering that, and, you know, you read the saints. Why do we read the saints if history doesn't matter, right? So, you know, that's one of the things too. And I would say pride, as far as the Israel thing goes, you know, nobody's special. Do you know what I mean? Jews aren't special. BLM isn't special. None of us is special. You know what I mean? Like, so putting people on a pedestal because of either out of fear, because you want to protect yourself, that's selfish. So that's a basic tenet of Christianity, that you don't want to be selfish. You want to be selfless as much as you can, but also nobody's special. You know, we don't need to coddle people and do things that make other people suffer in the process just because of that, right? So, you know, why should my history suffer? Why should my children suffer just to make somebody else feel special? None of us is special. And I think that's an extremely Orthodox view. If somebody wants to argue with me, they can, but I don't see any evidence that we need to put anyone on a pedestal other than bishops when they come to do a, you know, hierarchical liturgy. They literally sit on a pedestal, but at the end of the day, they're people too, right? So, and they shepherd us as well. So it's a symbiotic relationship. In the geopolitical sphere, as far as, you know, like Israel goes or BLM, you know, there's only one side getting stuff out of that deal. So that's not a very pro-human deal, in my opinion. And then I would say, as far as like civilizational stuff and people kind of waking up, you know, people on the right, conservatives, whatever, non-leftists, we always end up having debates or discussions on the defensive. And that's one thing I would advise people not to do. The onus is on the pro-democracy people. They are the ones that have the questions to answer. We don't have to defend whether you're a neo-Confederate or monarchist. That is not the point, right? Because those things aren't happening right now. Mass democracy and global homogenization, that's what's happening. That's why everybody's miserable. So the onus is on them. So I don't know why people, I think it's because we're nice. We're just nice people. But sometimes being nice is not the same as being kind. And, you know, ask them questions, ask them to defend the madness that they put forth. And it's usually a really easy house of cards to dismantle. They don't like it very much. And then they'll usually call you names and run away screaming and block you and things like that, or decide they don't want to talk to you anymore. That's very common, but that's a wheat and chaff moment. And it just brings you that clarity I was talking about.
Yeah. It's an interesting time to live in, especially as, you know, with the ortho bros, the online orthodoxy movements, which I've basically just blocked, I think 95% of all that kind of stuff, because it was a distraction. You can see people who are yearning for not just the truth, but a way of being. Again, to quote Father Turbo Quayles loosely, is that he said, you know, the drop off point for a lot of people is that many people from the right wing join orthodoxy because orthodoxy seems to be against the people that they're against, and then they get into the church and find out that actually, you know, it's all fine and good until you find out the problem is also you. In fact, the problem is really just you that you have to fix, and then when you fix you, then a lot of these other things just stop mattering to a certain degree.
Well, you gotta have good you gotta have a good catechism. Okay. So a lot of these people that complain about the ortho bros and, you know, okay, yeah, there might be some super wild, ultra zealot people that just stay that way forever and they just piety signal all over the place for like 20 years. Okay. A good catechism would help that in good pastoral care. Like nothing new has to be invented. It's the same dependable tools of the Orthodox Church fix that. So I said history is one of the things that, when my husband was talking about orthodoxy, you know, I was like, oh, it's weird. And the incense are funky and the candles freak me out, you know, whatever, that kind of thing. But it was one of the things that planted the seed. Now, if I was still, okay, I became Orthodox officially December 24, 2017. If that's all I was still talking about, there would be a problem, right? And then of course, if you're having consistent going to the services and hearing the homilies and reading the lives of the saints and reading daily scripture and doing your confessions, again, they're tools. So if somebody, you know, is ortho bro, like the stereotype, just, you know, piety signaling all over the place for a long time, you know, there's probably, so, you know, that doesn't need to be occurring. But also, I don't want to like spend my time talking against the ortho bros. I mean, I think those kinds of people are the exception, not the rule. The ortho bro phenomenon is just young men coming to the church in a world that has forgotten young men. I have three teenage sons. And if feeling abandoned, yeah, thank you. I need all the prayers I can get. If feeling abandoned by the world and totally crapped upon by every institution is what brings them in, God bless them. They need healing. They need the hospital as much as anybody else, black, white, polka dot, male or female. But, you know, I mean, they need the church. So why would people not want that? You know, it's almost like there's an anti-male bias among some of these Orthodox experts, you know, go figure. So everybody needs the hospital, but it will change you. And that's one of the things I think Michael Sisko has pointed this out. Yeah, okay, radical dissident right-wingers come in. But, you know, it's not that we abandon our political view, because I personally think politics, James Perloff says, it's politics is, what does he say? It's like human existence through like an institutional lens or whatever. His quote's better than that. But, you know, the feminists said the personal is the political, and that's one of the things I think they absolutely have right. Having babies, buying food, driving a car, it's all political, but it's also personal. So anyway, I guess I totally forgot my point, but Oh, what was I saying? Oh, if that's what brings them in, the politics, you know, I mean, they get tempered by the humility. They get tempered by, you know, the charity that is required of people that you want to give to other people. And you know, you just get changed. And so when, oh, back to Cisco, he said, when left wingers come in, now some of them will change, but I think overwhelmingly they want to change the church. Sarah Ricardi Swartz uses the word transform after Metropolitan Hilarion died. That's what she said. Oh, it's time for transformation. Nope. No, it's not. No, the church is not to be transformed. We are. And I think most generally speaking, right-wingers, dissident people, ortho bros get that. We are changed for the better. You know, it doesn't mean we don't still have, you know, right-wing politics. And the Texas Monthly gal in her most recent piece, Megan Clark Saliashvili, I can get that. Somebody was asking her, you know, what do you define as radical right-wingers? And she just says people who are against democracy. And it's like, well, count me as that. So again, the onus is on her to, you know, tell us why democracy is so great, but also, you know, that's her definition. So we don't want to come into the church and change it. We don't want innovations and renovations and all that jazz. We want to be changed.
A few things here. Yavier Olivia says, no more Christian nice guy. Paul Coughlin applies to all denoms. Yeah, I think there's a necessity to begin to redefine some terms. You know, I'm not a nice person, but I am a kind person.
Yeah.
And I think there's, you had mentioned some of along those lines earlier, and kindness is an interesting word because from the German, it literally means, you know, like, your kind, like your people, your tribe, your family. So when you treat someone with kindness, you're treating them as you would a family member. And sometimes you're a mother, I'm a father of a toddler. Like, you sometimes you realize that, like, some of the best, sometimes you can't be nice to your kids. You have to, say or do or enforce things that aren't nice or done in a nice way, but it is a kindness.
Right.
It was one of the breakthroughs for me, realizing that God's love includes suffering and doesn't exclude it, that it's a key component to God's love. I don't think it really clicks until you have a child and you realize, that, you know, if anyone ever threatened or put her in danger, I would have to do some unsavory things, or I'm prepared to do some unsavory things in response. But also that sense that your child has to learn sometimes, your child sometimes has to fall down. You know, you want to make sure your child doesn't fall down and severely hurt themselves, especially when they're young, but you sometimes have to let your child fall so they can learn what that is and why not. Because you can only say so many things. You have to be able to both model behavior and allow them to experience life in, you know, as safely or as responsibly as possible, and you bring them along as you go. And when you start to see that as a relationship between God and man, things make a lot more sense. Like, you know, I just was watching, I think it was Father John Hears, I think so, talking about specifically about why does God let bad things happen, and, you know, in that sense, it's that, well, it's for you to learn. It's for you to go through these periods in life and come out the other side with a much more rich and a deeper understanding of how life works and your place in it, which oftentimes, as you said before, is like, you're not special. You're not that unique. You're not that, you know, you're certainly not that wonderful. You got a long way to go. You know, even the saints are still saying the Jesus prayer all the time. And recognizing that they are born and have sin in them as well. Like, you know, it's a constant struggle. And I just one last thing, and I'll kick it over to you, Rebecca. I find a lot, especially with the evangelicals and the Protestant crowd, something really annoying but interesting is that where we see baptism changes. I think that a lot of the Protestants, or especially evangelicals, believe that it all ends with baptism. Like, you're baptized, you're saved, you're good.
Yeah.
And then you can just go to church on Sunday with the smoke machines and the, you know, Bridge Over Troubled Water recantations and all that kind of stuff. But you're good, right? Whereas with Orthodoxy, and even the Roman Catholics, I think still believe this, is that baptism is just the start. Like, yep. That's just a confirmation of something. And then you keep going. Mm-hmm. You're not saved because of magic water or because of the Eucharist or any of that. You have to prove your salvation constantly. You have to keep working towards it and making yourself worthy of it. I don't know where you want to go with that.
Well, I butchered Perloff's quote and I found it in a blog of mine. So let me give him proper credit. It's politics is essentially spiritual warfare carried out on the human level. I love that. Anyway, so let's go back to your point. Yeah, the once saved, always saved thing was a big sticking point for us, you know? And then they have these terms like backsliding and things like that. But if there's backsliding, and they're always talking about that, or there's seasons, oh, it's just a season, you know, but it's once saved, always things. So there's things they say that don't quite fit together. And, you know, I think it's very disheartening for people who struggle, and that's most people. So, you know, Orthodoxy, it's, you know, in my catechism that the priest said, it's, we are spiritual athletes and you have to train, you know, it's the long race. It is the long race and you don't make it across the line until you're in heaven. So it's daily, it's every day. And so that's one of the things that makes sense to me rationally, but it also makes sense because it's how we're made. I mean, there's no person walking around sinless, even the most devout, you know, really good Protestant, you know, they have their issues too. So it's realistic, you know. And then I would say, I like your parent parallel, you know, the analogy. I mean, that's why we have father, you know, that's why we have this hierarchical thing within Orthodoxy. And, you know, being a parent, you often are doing the hard thing with your child. You know, you are not giving them the thing that they want because they must learn, just like we must learn too. And, you know, they're not your friends, you know, and I love my kids, but they'll never be my friend. They'll always be my sons and I will be their mother. Now, as they get older, we can joke and things like that. And in fact, they're all snarky like me, go figure. They're always trying to joke with me. And I said, nope, when do y'all get to joke with me? And then and then they're like, when we get married and have babies, mom. And I'm like, that's absolutely right. So save your snark for later. Cause it's usually like when they're trying to give me grief, of course. But anyway, and then language is important. And then back to the anti-Semitic thing, you know, anti-Semitic doesn't mean anything. I'm a quarter Lebanese, so I could be Semitic. That's why it's not hyphenated and with a capital S. That's why when I do write the word anti-Semitic, I do hyphenate it and use a capital S, because Semitic means something very specific. And that does not mean modern Talmudic Jews. That's just not a thing. So I don't like language being just thrown around willy-nilly. And then we have a lot of words that are thrown around willy-nilly. Modern words like racism, that is also a modern word too. So, you know, I think not hating people pretty much covers that. And that's just a very easy Christian precept. You try to love people and not hate them. Okay, done. You know, next thing. So, the abuse of language and people bending to it is part of the problem. And that goes back to the nice thing. You know, being nice doesn't mean being a doormat, and being Orthodox is not a suicide pact. You know, if you're going to be martyred, you're going to be martyred, but, you know, we're not supposed to go out of our way to be martyred.
Yeah, I think a lot of people say things and don't realize that by saying it, you have to now do things. To bring it back to the Christ is King thing, and to hear any Christian even have to, you know, obviously this whole thing between Ben Shapiro and Candace Owens is a personal drama that's been brought out to the public, and we really shouldn't give it too much, throw too much gas on that fire. The fact that it's being done during Holy Week, you know, during the Catholic Lent. It was right before Good Friday on the Catholic Lent, right? These things aren't there's no coincidences. These are planned little events that are done to get the most attention and attraction, but they're also done by people who aren't producing their own ideas. So they're having to become more and more desperate. The Daily Wire has been having a weird week. I think what's his face took aim against gamers.
Did they hire Destiny?
No, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Destiny. He just keeps showing up everywhere.
I'm like, I don't understand what the allure is with that guy.
He was on. He did that talk.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's talk about Destiny for a second. I'll onboard you with this. I don't know. Have you been paying attention to the stuff I've been talking about with Eventual Sun? Have you been paying any attention to that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So
I've been trying to stay out of the fray, but I get sucked.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is more of a diagnostic. It's a vision for things that are coming. I can onboard you with this.
A big picture thing. All right,
sort of. That's here. Yeah, I don't do details very often. I do broad concepts.
I like it.
So I was listening to Pete Quinones and Paul Fahrenheit talk about, they did a few shows in late 2023 about the spirit of the age. Just trying to figure out what the new spirit of the age will be. And I kind of got my brain going. And I looked at wokeism as, yes, it is Dissident Obama. Thanks. Thanks for jumping in. Hey, Nick. So I was thinking along the lines of that wokeism to me feels like the end of something rather than the start of something. That it's sort of the accumulation of all these liberal precepts that are just kind of
like a last gasp.
Kinda. Yeah. And I was then thinking like symbolically how this attaches to different zeitgeist, egregores, you know, actual spirits, if you want to call it that way. So I thought that the best way to defining the post-civil rights movement of, let's say, the 60s up until, let's say, COVID would have been the devouring mother. It's a Jungian term. This is a shadow of the divine mother. Kind of classically exampled of like the woman who loves her children so much she smothers them to death, or to protect them from the world, you know, who both loves, who both fears and hates men but lusts after men, who is all the good nurturing things we think of motherhood. Well, you think of the inverse of that, you know, deceitful, the constant martyring victim. Who needs to be the victim, you know, even though
they
can never take responsibility. Exactly. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of resentment is the key, I think, motivating factor behind all this stuff. So then I thought, okay, well, what came before her? And I thought, well, the tyrannical father, which would be the inverse of the wise king or the wise father, would kind of fit the, let's say, the turn of the century. World War One, World War Two, Great Depression. I've used the image of Apollo eating his children to kind of keep them from unseating him. You know, the idea of keeping his children down, destroying whole generations of men.
Hmm? I mean, that's the welfare warfare state is like gobbling up people.
Yeah, exactly. American
citizens. Okay.
And you look at the World War One doesn't make sense. Yeah. You know,
well,
you
the
look
whole
at the
20th century doesn't.
No, I mean Thomas 7:7 once said classically, and it's a good line, is that he said, you know, you have to think of the 20th century as this very strange anomaly, as a very unique and distinct century, because you know when people keep making hallmarks back to it or using it as historical precedents, like don't do that.
Right.
It's a weird one. And I think
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's, you know, people talk about the Chinese, how they think in terms of thousands of years, and then other civilizations think of at least hundreds. You know, we don't. We think in like days, hours, 2 days ago was old news, that kind of stuff. But it's this presentist thing. And this is why the hubris of people who, you know, want to go after the monarchists or, you know, people who have an affinity for, decentralized lowercase r republicanism, you know, the Jeffersonian model, that kind of thing, you know. And it's like all this modern stuff is modern, you know, throughout the story of man, all those other things were happening, you know? So, I mean, even like the Republican government, I mean, we're talking about going back to ancient Greece. So they act again, like we're the weirdos, and they see only through this presentist lens. And sometimes I think it's hubris and they're just playing on historically ignorant people. But I honestly think a lot of these experts with the PhDs, they really are historically ignorant. And I feel sorry for them because I actually think a lot of them just don't know because they never learned it. You know, I learned a lot of this outside of college. You know, I only have a bachelor's degree, but if you're not a lifelong learner and you just decide you're the smartest person in the room and then you plug your ears, I mean, that's just a really sad, pathetic existence. You know, learning is awesome, you know, and that's what, as a homeschool mom, that's always been my goal, to raise godly men and lifelong learners, right? And that's one of the things about Orthodoxy that I love. It's a deep well. Even the smartest, you know, monk living on a pillar, he doesn't know it all, right? You know, so you always have to learn. But that's part of the spirit of the age too. And that's why these wheat and chaff moments, even though they suck for people and they're bitter pills, but it is something that they need to wake them out of the malaise. And, it, you know, it may not happen enough or in time, for whatever awaits us all. But, you know, the entire 20th century was a psyop. So you think of, like, you know, my parents and your parents and, you know, if you're a Gen Xer, you know, your parents or, you know, grandparents, that kind of thing, their entire, like everything they learned pretty much was a lie. And so it's like, I don't get in the details of like, oh, you know, the moon landing and the this and the that and the, you know, this red flag and, you know, the USS Liberty. Okay, yeah, I know some of the details of those things. Pearl Harbor, but it's like, it's all the arc. And when you think about that, that is most boomers, like their entire life, you know? So yeah, I can get why some of them don't want to hear about it and don't want to have these tough conversations. But if they love their children and grandchildren and great grandchildren, they probably should be having these conversations.
Great points. Like, this is so, just to finish with the spirit thing. So you have the tyrannical father, which begets the devouring mother. And I believe what's coming down the pike is the vengeful son. So that this new spirit of the age, and it's coming, and it's already here, and we're going to start seeing more and more of it. But mm-hmm. the spirit of the vengeful son will be a spirit of totalizing violence. So it won't just be kinetic, although there'll be a lot of that. It'll also be in different ways. I bring up the idea of the, I'm not sure if you know, but game stonks, where basically these bunch of Anons, internet Anons, played the stock market against a hedge fund and almost destroyed a hedge fund over GameStop. And one of the,
one of the,
they were interviewing one of the lead guys about it. And he's like, well, you know, if you keep holding your money, you'll go broke. Like, you'll lose all your gains. He's like, I don't care. He's like, the point is not to get rich. The point is to hurt them, the hedge fund. Cause those are the people who hurt my dad in 2008 and 2009. Hmm. When you have Elon Musk flipping the bird to Disney and all the, and that establishment, that's vengeful son. Like, mm-hmm. you're starting to see this coming online. And this is where people are starting, I think, getting woken up a little bit, where the consequences of the last 120 years are now hitting us, and it's becoming undeniable. When you see a woman getting punched in the face in New York City and having to get her jaw shut, like, this is happening, you know, to the point where feminism and all these nice little theories and these grand virtual virtues aren't cutting it. You know,
yeah.
In the face of Haitian murder, cannibal rape gangs coming to your country, well, right. Golly gosh gee, you know, Gloria Steinem isn't coming to save you. None right. of these things are gonna work for you. You're gonna need strong men to do something. And what I would say about the vengeful son is that the danger, especially for the Orthodox folk, is that it's gonna feel good. It's going to feel right that, you know, when certain people or certain groups are, you know, put on the chopping block, people are going to start cheering it. And there's even a good reason to, but that's where we can get veered off the royal path quite easily by starting to become one of the crowd, you know, who cheers on violence, who forgets that Christ is king, that is trying to to put a man in that position to take care of this, all these material woes. And that's the sacrifice of the soul.
Yeah. And nature's going to take care of some of these things. You know, men are men and women are women, and there's no denying that. And this is why women overwhelmingly don't work dirty, dangerous jobs. But I was just making a couple notes here. You know, the women in New York City, you know, being accosted just because I guess they're white women or whatever. You know, that was the knockout game. That was all the rage a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Colin Flaherty wrote all about that, you know? So it's like, these things are going to keep happening, and the wheat and chaff moments are going to keep happening because you're going to have to wake up eventually. It's just like, you know, the mythos, the narrative that was crafted, you know, 20 minutes after Charlottesville, you know, a lot of people knee jerk, oh, they're Nazis, this is horrible, when they didn't understand at all what was happening and didn't watch all the videos that used to be available when I was watching it live and in person and I thought about going. Well, they had their January 6th and they got Charlottesville. So, you know, I mean, those things are going to keep happening, and it's gonna make some people stop and think, wow, maybe I shouldn't have done the knee jerk thing that all the institutions, especially the mainstream regime media, wanted me to think. Maybe, you know, I shouldn't, they tricked me in 2020, and, you know, maybe I should really never believe anything they say. Now, maybe every once in a while it's a half truth or maybe even a whole truth. Who knows? Maybe they're having a good day and they just don't feel like being lying, evil people. But, you know, the smart thing to do as a media consumer and a citizen and a human being is to assume they're playing you. So, you know, those things, you know, I just, those moments are happening all the time to people. Oh, well, if I just, you know, use that person's pronoun, they'll be nice to me, you know, or, you know, back in the day, North Carolina, where I live, we had this bathroom thing, you know, and now all hell is breaking loose with the Rainbow Mafia madness, you know, as all around. I mean, nobody can deny that anymore. So being nice didn't do anything for people. But I would say the royal path, my patron saint is Saint Ilya the Righteous of Georgia, a male saint. And he was murdered in the early 20th century by social Democrats. And he, you know, fought for the Georgian people, the language, he an attachment to the church, history. He said, if you, a man without history is, you know, like a beggar, that you have to understand who you are. And the church is part of that. And so is your language, you know, borders, language, culture, basically. And when he was murdered by them, and his wife forgave the murderers and did not want them to go to jail for the crime. So that's, you know, she didn't, you don't have to do that, you know, but I mean, that's another thing about orthodoxy. You don't have to do one thing. That is the true diversity of humanity, that we're made different ways. And, you know, if you want to seek justice for somebody who took a life, an innocent life, that's okay. But if you want to say, you know, their penance is them living the rest of their lives knowing that they killed a good man who was now, like, you know, the symbol of Georgia. You know, everything is named after him. If you go to Tbilisi, you can do that too, right? You can lay down your life for someone else, you know, or you can try to defend that person. You know, none of it is, what is the word I'm trying to say? None of these things are mutually exclusive. You know, you discern in the moment and in the situation through the lens that is you, a unique human made in God's image. I don't know if I touched on most of the things you said, but I'll end there.
No, that's good. We're coming up to the hour. you've mentioned before that you're taking a break or retiring, part-time retiring from the, podcasting. Semi. Getting a little bit of that Southern lilt in there. What's your plans? What's what do you want to do now? I mean, you're obviously busy with the church and mm-hmm. other involvements, but in terms of media, any big plans, any or small plans or medium-sized plans at all?
Well, keep blogging. I mean, I have a journalism degree. I got into writing back in the day because I could never convey verbally what I was thinking and feeling. And I sound smart when I write, but not when I talk so much. So, you know, I'll keep writing. I'm working on a ton of stuff right now. that's one of the things that is a very bad habit of mine. I have like probably 20 essays that are like 50 to 80% done. And my husband's like, just finish one for the love of Pete. So I really want to do that because that's my love. And that's what I started doing in 2016, because I didn't even start the podcast till 2020. Now I still have my Libsyn account and all that kind of thing. So, but one of my niche with podcasting was I would do a lot of research beforehand because I'm just a research dork. And that's very time consuming. And so I would do these huge deep dives with people, which was kind of my niche. And I think I did a good job with it, but that was so much work. So if I do kind of resurrect the podcasting, I think it's going to be like this, having a conversation with person. It's not that you didn't do research on me, but you know what I mean? Of just talking with people and letting them, I really like, I'm going to steal this whole thing that you're doing, but just letting them talk. And, you know, like a friend of mine, Paul Graham, just wrote a book and I want to have him on, like, just because it would be just an talk. Easy interview, and just say, hey, Paul, I haven't read the book, so tell me all about it. I'm on chapter 2 and I might be there for a while, you know? So instead of rushing to read the book and, you know, putting notes and post-its all over the place, just say, hey man, what's in the book? Tell me why I need to finish it and get beyond chapter 2. It's a really good book.
I studied journalism with a radio bent back in the, I guess, mid 90s. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, my prof said, which I've taken to heart doing even podcasting, is that you don't have to be an expert in everything. Your job, yep, is to find the expert and get, yeah, the best intel or info, the most pertinent information out there. You have to practice discernment, in terms of what do you think the audience needs to hear, and then give me all the information and I'll figure that out, you know?
Yeah. One of my favorite podcasts is Tom Woods. And I listened, mm-hmm, to him for years. And that's one of the things too. I still listen to his podcast, but I used to listen to podcasts like all the time. So I'm like, I listen to fewer, mm-hmm, listen to more Father John homilies and some things like that. But I mean, I love podcasts, but back to Tom Woods, you know, Tom Woods is a really freaking smart guy, but he let his guests talk. And, you know, sometimes, like, you know, I was a long time listener, first time caller, long time listener of Tom Woods. And, you knew, like, he would be disagreeing with somebody, but he wouldn't be like, well, let me tell you what, bub, you know, he would just let him talk. And that's what I tried to do with my guests. So I really built myself on the Tom Woods model. Now, because Tom Woods is like Harvard educated and super like Mensa brain. I don't know if he's really a Mensa, but you know what I'm saying? He's really high IQ and I'm just like, Mensa brain. You know, I'm just average intelligence gal, you know, that's why I started doing so much research, not to debate somebody, just so I could have like, you know, a half decent intellectual conversation. But, you know, just talk. I may resurrect it and just talk to smart people. Like, that's all I've done for 84, 85 episodes. And because, you know, I do the Southern thing and this Orthodox thing, you know, I turn sometimes Southern people onto Orthodoxy, and sometimes Orthodox people who've never even thought about their stuff, they're like, wow, maybe the South is awesome, that kind of thing. So I have like a diverse audience, so to speak. So I had to get it off for a while.
I've been following you on and off for at least over the last year or so, maybe longer. I don't know. I don't do time anymore. Like the last 2023.
I don't do time.
No, as a side quest, 2023 is like, it almost didn't happen for me. Like, Jerry, I don't know if it's the same for you or anyone listening, but
it was crazy. It was crazy because
our mission became apparent. It just was like, yeah, it just was like this weird blip year. Sorry, go ahead.
My mission became a parish, and I was the head honcho in planning the first Ludwell Orthodox Fellowship Conference. And that took a lot of time on top of homeschooling and feeding my kids and, you know, dusting once a 6 months or whatever, you know, I mean, just the basic life on top of all of those things, and podcasting and blogging, right? You know, and 2023 was just wild. It was a wild ride for me personally. I got, you know, a lot of hit pieces written about me, you know, good times, just an average year.
You're above the target when you get starting in chaff. So
that's right.
Or your ass is getting chaffed either way.
I know I'm in the crosshairs right in the middle, and I've been there for a while, but you know, a lot of people are, and you know, I'm just the gift that keeps on giving because I do speak my mind, and, you know, I'm kind of like the target with, oh, you know, she's anti-feminist, you know, she's a homeschool mom, you know, she's pro-patriarchy or whatever, you know, she's Orthodox, and, you know, she is Southern without apology. So that, for people whose bread and butter is to malign people who 25 years ago were just normal, that, you know, I'm just like the poster girl.
Yeah, well, there's not a lot of women in this space. So very, very happy and honored to have you on.
Thank you.
The things that you need to pitch and let people know where they can get access to you. And we'll get you out of here if you want to stick around for a little bit after we do the outro. I'll have some things to talk to you about that you might be interested in.
Excellent. Yeah, dissidentmama.net. That's where you can read all my essays and listen to my podcast or watch them. All the information is there, all the links. So just go there. That's the easiest thing to say. And then Southern
Orthodox. Links in the description below.
Excellent. And southernorthodox.org. Even if you're not from the South, check it out. It is, it's a wonderful mission-based organization that, you know, has been in existence since November 2021. And we're having our next conference Saturday, September 7th in Lockhart, Texas. And when I said it's going to be at Buck's church.
Lockhart?
Yeah, it's not going to be at his church, but, you know, we'll be doing our thing offsite somewhere. But, of course, Orthodox people and inquirers, that is where we will go. St. Andrew the Apostle, I think, is the name of his church. Father Ignatius Lozano is very into it. And that is good because there are a lot of priests who are not into it. So we love Father Iggy.
I was just talking to Father Iggy in Buck's Zoom monthly Zoom call meeting that you can join up if you go over to Buck Johnson, I think either on X or the Kind of Low podcast website. You can sign up at Patreon. I believe it's $10 thereabouts per month. And every month he has a guest on and does a private Zoom call meeting. Father Iggy was the guest last month or last week.
Very awesome.
So it was really, yeah, it was cool to talk to him. I've talked to Father Turbo there and a few other really good guests. So shout out to Buck. I receive no money for this shilling, folks. I just think good people should talk to good people.
This is
the tribe. This is the clan. You know,
that's right.
We're going to reform that word. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, everyone who's watching, listening. Again, we are, you know, growing. We're so close to 2,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Nice.
A number that I honestly thought a year ago was never going to happen when we were stuck at 200 and not treading any, just treading water. Buck just said he just Vmo'd me. Okay.
Buck Johnson's sure right, awesome.
Make sure it's the right Marin show. There's a few pretenders out there, so you know, you don't want some weird bot in Korea getting it. So yeah, like, subscribe, do the things, do the bells, all the rest of it. I will be back later on in the members only, reading out, doing a live read on the new article I put out. The should is the enemy of the will, and doing any kind of AMAs that people want to talk about. Look for the link. It'll be out there soon. Rebecca, Dissident Mama, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jason.
And we will, my pleasure. Stick around for a little bit. We'll vamp after the show. Thanks, folks. We'll talk to you again very soon. ¶¶